Chaf Amud Beis, starting the second parak. Hayashin tachas amita basukkah. One who sleeps under a bed in a sukkah, layati lechavas, has not fulfilled his obligation. You are all still wondering, wait a minute, I thought there were a lot of details to this. I thought it depended whether it has a gag, it doesn't have a gag. Is it a saratwachim? It's not a saratwachim. Wasn't this of great significance in the past? We had definitely discussed the idea of a sukkah under another sukkah, sukkah as under a tree, sukkah in a house. There are all kinds of permutations that we discussed in the past. And if you have a bed or a tent inside of a sukkah, that certainly could be a theoretical problem. What is the story with that? So this Mishnah seems to just write the whole thing off and says that once you have some kind of tent inside a sukkah, finish, you're not fulfilling your mitzvah sukkah. What does Rashi say about this? Lo yatza de'oyel mafsik v'ino la sukkah. There is a tent that is separating between him and the sukkah, or the schach, I guess, if you want to say it like that. Then Rashi says something very interesting. The essential mitzvah of dwelling in a sukkah is eating, drinking, and sleeping. Why did Rashi say that? The Mishnah says, Alacha, that if you sleep inside of a bed, something that's covered, right? Inside a tent or something like that. You're under a bed, in a sukkah. So we're not talking about the tents. We're not talking about any of the cases we discussed before. He's sleeping under the bed. Okay, it was mentioned before, but that wasn't what... He's under the bed. So he's not yoytze. What is he not yoytze? Now you say what?
Oh, it's the same sukkah.
At all? The rest of the sukkahs?
No.
What's he not yoytze?
Sleeping.
So now we start to understand Rashi, right? So Rashi is saying, because one of the essential mitzvahs of sukkah is sleeping. So it's interesting. The Mishnah could have said, if a person eats under the bed, you know. I guess most people aren't eating under the bed, but a person could sleep under the bed. Maybe it was more likely to happen. But the scenario that the Mishnah is giving us has to do with sleeping. And Rashi says, FYI, there are three main things that need to be done in the sukkah, and that is eating, drinking, and sleeping. Yeah.
Now, is each one of those three things its own mitzvah, or is it you have to do all those things in order to fulfill the mitzvah?
It's a great question. How do you look at that? On the one hand, there's one mitzvah, a sukkah stei shivas yamim. On the other hand, it looks like a continuous mitzvah, you know? But it can't be that if a person fails to sleep in the sukkah, that it invalidates his eating and other things. It sounds like at the time, he's in violation of the mitzvah, because he's sleeping outside of a sukkah when he could be sleeping in a sukkah. He's not oines. So he sounds like he's in violation at that moment. Yeah?
Why does that say living, eating, and sleeping? Why can't you say living?
Well, that's Rashi's kind of his whole point, is that he wants you to know that one could have argued that what does it mean to live someplace? So you eat there. Your meals are like kind of, you know, you go home to eat, you know? When you're finished working, you go home to eat. Not a snack. Where do you eat? When you're at home, where do you eat? that's why I changed it, right? Now, where are you in Mayu? Because the gap is sort of like, you know, it's interesting. That in itself becomes an interesting Shiloh. So let's say that you're going to light Neir Shabbos. Let's say you're going to light Neir Chanukah. So where is the central location of your existence? Where is your home? Is your home where you sleep? Is that what?
Smoke alarm's gonna go off by lighting the dorm, so.
Yeah, we're not allowed in Hawaii to do that. But the question, just in the abstract, is what is technically considered to be your home, where you eat or where you sleep, if you do those things in different places? What does define your home more? So one could have argued cogently that it goes by where you eat. So Rashi's whole point here is that you can't leave out sleeping. Sleeping is extremely significant in that calculation. I had a Shiloh. Shiloh was a fellow who bought a house in Massachusetts someplace, and he wants to basically fix it up, and then he's going to rent it out. He's going to rent it out. It's not a Jewish community there, so he's going to rent it out to non-Jews. So does he have to put up mezuzahs?
That's own property.
So it's his house, but he doesn't live there. Does it require a mezuzah?
No.
First, if you're renting it out to a non-Jew, are you allowed?
No,
you're allowed to put up mezuzahs. I tell you, Maisa Shahaya, you know, there's a big Indian not to take off mezuzahs when you move out of a house, yeah? or an apartment or whatever, not supposed to take down mezuzahs. It's heebie-jeebie stuff, and it's also practical stuff, whatever, but it's certainly at least the heebie-jeebie stuff. You don't want to take down mezuzahs. Bad news.
Even if you're selling your laundry?
Okay, so this is what happened. We had an apartment, and it was in Washington Heights, and we were leaving to a bigger apartment, and this apartment is going to be rented out to another Jewish couple. So we figured we should leave the mezuzahs up, because you're not supposed to take mezuzahs down. And if you sell your house to a Jewish family, you're not allowed to take the mezuzahs down. If they're really expensive mezuzahs and they have sentimental value, okay, you can exchange them for others, you know, before you go. But you can't just take down mezuzahs. You're not supposed to do that. So this was not a house that was being sold. It was an apartment. So what happens in between apartments being rented, you know? Sometimes they repaint it. They'll, you know, sometimes remodel it if necessary. So that's what happened. Kachava. I came into the apartment one day before we were completely, you know, totally moved out. And they had already started working on the apartment. Guess what I found in the garbage bags? The mezuzahs. I had to go looking through the garbage bags to retrieve all of the mezuzahs, which I did not then put back on the doors. So you should know. That's a real serious problem. You have to know the situation. You can't always leave mezuzahs up, even though you're supposed to. If you're going to rent it out to non-Jews, you're not allowed to leave mezuzahs up. Not allowed. So Shiloh was, but he's going to go to the house to do the remodeling because I guess he works in construction a little bit or whatever. So he's going to be in the house to fix it up. That's the Shiloh. So since he's going to be in the house to fix it up, does it require mezuzah? So the answer is, well, it depends what you mean you're going to be in the house. Are you living in the house? Has that become your home? If you buy a house, this is a misnomer. People think you have 30 days to put up mezuzahs in the house that you bought. That's not correct. If you buy a house and you move in and you're living there, you have to put up mezuzahs right away. It's your house. If you're someplace, you know, you're someplace else and you're renting and you're in a hotel for a little while, so then it takes 30 days to acquire a real kavius, like you're really there, like that's your home. But you bought it. Of course it's your home. So that's the answer to his question, is it really depends. If you're just going to be in there and you're going to have snacks while you fix up the place, but then you're going to, you know, you're eating dinner in the restaurant, eating dinner at a friend's house, you're sleeping in a hotel, so then that's not called you happen to own it, but that's not your house. But if you're going to be sleeping there for however much time it's going to take you to fix it up, you're going to be eating your meals and sleeping there, treating it like it's your home, then 100% you've got to put up mezuzahs right away. I have a feeling he'll be staying at a hotel while he fixes up the house. That's quite an expense to put up mezuzahs while you're there and then take them all down. Okay, but in any case, so that's a question of what defines the home. So that's what Rashi's saying, is that yeshiva sukkah really has to do with three things: achila, shesia, v'sheina, eating, drinking, and sleeping. Okay, so in any case, so that's the Mishnah, because the case of a person sleeping, as opposed to other cases it theoretically could have given, because why not, eating under the bed or whatever. So it's interesting, why did Yehuda Nasi pick this particular example? Is it just because it's the most likely, or does he actually want to make a point? You should know that this is the greatest chiddush in yeshiva sukkah. Because to eat and drink, we got it. Everybody knows that. But sleeping? If there's something problematic about your sleeping, is that really a problem? 100%. 100%. You have to sleep in the sukkah. And he's not yoytze his mitzvah if he's not sleeping in the sukkah and if he's sleeping under a bed. Our custom used to be, or we used to sleep under the bed in front of these gedolim, the zakenim, in the sukkah of Allah, and they never said a word to us. So Rav Yehuda says, obviously, that's not a problem. So Tana Kama holds sleeping under a bed in a sukkah is a real problem. Rav Yehuda says, it's interesting, he argues in this fashion, but he says, what are you talking about? We used to sleep under the beds and nobody ever said anything to us. Rav Shimon also responds with a maise, not with a statement. Maise b'tevi avdi shel Rabbi Gamliel. There was a maise shahaya with, what should we call him, Toby? Tevi? So, Tubby? Nah, Tubby. Yeah, Camp Tubby. What? Tubby? I always heard his pronounce Tevi. Tubby? Anyway, so Tevi, the Evid of Rabbi Gamliel, so Hashahaya Yashayin Tachas Amita. He used to sleep under the bed. Ramalahan Rabbi Gamliel is a Canaan. Rabbi Gamliel said to the Zakanim, Reisim Tevi Avdi. You saw my slave Tevi. Talmud Chacham, v'yaydeya, and he knows shavonim peturim in a sukkah, that slaves are putter from sukkah. It's a mitzvah asay shasvan grama. So nashim, avadim, women, slaves, they're all exempt. Lefichach yashen yitachas amita. That's why he would sleep under the bed. So what does that show? That if you sleep under a bed, you are not yotzei the mitzvah. That was the whole point. Ragun was trying to show how clever the guy is, because he doesn't have a mitzvah anyway. So what's the difference? He sleeps under the bed. So why is he bothered sleeping in the sukkah anyway? Maybe he was his slave. So he wanted to be available. I don't know. Who says it's such a complicated halachic point? What?
So he slept under the bed.
In the bed. Maybe Ragun is going to need him at any time.
Needs to climb under the bed. It's a little interesting.
Yeah, roll out, you know. Where's Suisa? Suisa not here?
No?
I was going to have him say his Autobots roll out line. Whatever, can you do? Autobots, roll out. He's good at it. I don't know, whatever. I'm not sure. Is there a halachic principle here, or is it just style? But whatever it is, that's what he told him. So you see from this state, what the point of this is, that Rabbi Shimon says this is a ma'isa shahaya. So obviously, it's like the Tanakhama, not like Rabbi Yehuda, that avadim are patur mitzvah. That's why he slept under the bed, meaning you're not yotze, you sleep under the bed. So according to our pathway, you learn. The person sleeps under a bed, he's not yotze. So the Gemara says, back to what we were bothered by. If anyone that sleeps under a bed is not yoytze. A bed under a bed. It's interesting. You know, if you're sleeping in a tent, so the tent is made to be a tent. But a bed is not made to be a tent. You hear the distinction I'm pointing out? Then maybe we should distinguish between something which is made to cover you and something which is made for you to sleep on. It happens to be a table, right? Table's not made for us underneath the table. A table and a bed are very similar. If a person's doing something in terms of his mitzvah sukkah, he's eating, he's sleeping, whatever, under the table, under the bed. So one could have argued that that's not really a problem. Because at the end of the day, that's not a tent. They have these beds we discussed in the past where the bed is covered by a tent. Okay, so then you got to talk about whether that's a problem. That's there to be a tent. But just because you happen to be under the table, and technically speaking... So what do you mean, technically speaking? So I know what you'll say. You'll say, very nice that it's not there to be a tent, but it is a tent. It is a tent. So on the one hand, we can discuss something which is there to divide between your head and the ceiling, your head in Shemayim, your head in the rain, a tent. So that is problematic. But here we're talking about something that's not there to be a tent. So who says it's problematic? So what's going to be their pushback? What will you say? That it doesn't matter what the kavana of the asiyas ha-table or asiyas ha-bed was, what are you going to say? Sof kol sof, as I say at the end of the day, what? It's a tent. In other words, what do you mean it's a tent? It's not a tent. No, because it divides between you and the sech. So I don't care what the purpose of it is. At the end of the day, it is a tent. Well, if that's what you're going to say, then you better be sure it has the shiurim of a tent. Because if you have something that doesn't have the shiurim of a tent, but that's the whole reason that it's made, so you can still argue without all of the shiurim, what are you talking about? That's a tent! But if it's not there to be a tent, then the only way it's going to be a problem is it has the shiurim that are problematic. Well, if it doesn't have the shiurim that are problematic, and it's not intended to be a tent, then what is the problem here? So that's the Gemara's pushback right away. It says, how could it be that any bed you sleep under is a problem? Halakha Sara. No bed is 10 tefachim high off the ground. Right? 10 tefachim is, you know, high out of the desk, a typical table. What bed is that high? So how can it be that a person sleeping under a bed is going to have the shiurim that are problematic? What are you going to tell me? It's a tent? It ain't a tent. It's the bottom of a bed. Tirgum Shmuel, mita sara. That's right. Shmuel explained, you're going to have to say he's talking about a bed that's 10 tefachim high. So that means we've already adjusted this Mishnah quite significantly. So it's not pshat that if a person sleeps under a bed, it's a problem. It's a person that sleeps under something that has the shiur of a rishus hayavid, of a separate rishus almost. Separate rishus. Tanar Hassan, we learn in the Mishnah over there, Echad Chazar, Echad Chor, Shecharuru Mayim, Oy Shratim, Oy Shachalto Malachas, V'chein Midvach Abonim, Soyer Shal Kuris. There's a list of things over here that have some kind of overhang or space. What's the list? What's a chor? A hole. So someone said to me, but what do you mean? I thought a hole was a bore. So that's a good point. A bore is a hole in the ground. A chor is like a hole in the wall. Chorim stuckin. B'dikas chametz is you have to search and all the chorim stuckin. That means all the cracks and crevices. Because usually those are the things that are in the walls, not in the ground. So it doesn't make a difference if it's a hole. Shechareruhu, so that's, I don't know, hold. That hold, is that a verb in English? A hole that hold out. A crevice that creviced out. What'd you say? Yeah. Dug out. Shechareruhu mahayim. It was formed by the water. Or shratzim, or creepy crawlies. You know, they dug out some kind of tent over here. Whatever these types of shratzim are. Or you know, there's a huge machlokas. Not every creature that dies has tumah. Yeah, there's something called a nevela, which is like a regular, like, you know, big type of these land animals that we eat. But then there's these things called shratzim. There are 8 shratzim. We don't know exactly what all of them are. So it's funny, in some of these books that like show what they're supposed to be telling you what the shratzim are. So I saw one picture book that just has like the outline or shadowed in or something like that. So it's like, you know, but it's not really it because, you know, I'm not really sure. It's cute. But in any case, so shratzim are a very general term for anything that's like a creepy crawly. Then there's a technical word for shratzim, which there are 8 technical shratzim that when they die, they're tummy. Here, we don't care about that. Here, it's just a question of creepy crawlies. It means that it wasn't the person that made this hole. Yeah, it was an animal.
Well, oh, shratzim, is that in reference to something like a rat or something? Or like a
yeah. Maybe a mole is even included in shratzim.
Okay, but it's not like a little insect or some sort.
Right. Or a chalas or melachas, from the word melach, salt. So it was eaten away by salt deposits or by, I don't know, whatever that is.
Corrosive
materials. It was eaten away by something. But again, all naturally occurring stuff. V'chein midvach avonim, a row of stones. V'chein soyer shel kareis, an arrangement of beams. So what's interesting here is that the last two seem to be things that are made by people. They were stacked. But everything else on the list is natural occurring events. So all of these things, whether they are naturally occurring or they are stacked by a human, ma'ahila la tuma, create an oil for tuma, create a tent for tuma, which means what? That the tuma will what?
It will be makabal
tuma. That it will be makabal tuma?
That if a person's in there,
right.
There's a tuma in there.
Right. It allows the tuma to spread underneath wherever there is a tent, right? It will not, and the tumah will not rise above the tent. It will be stuck underneath it, and therefore spread wherever that tent or hole or whatever you want to call it, whatever, however far it goes. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. Kol oyel sheino asu bidei adam, any covering or tent, whatever you want to call it, that is not made by man, einoi oyel, is not a tent. Wow. That's interesting. So we always thought that an ohel just meant, in reality, there's something covering it. You know, it doesn't matter how it got there. And now Rabbi Yehuda is making a big chiddush that actually only considered to be a tent when a person made a tent. But just because something in reality is a tent doesn't mean anything. It's of no significance. Does that sound like anything that has to do with our Mishnah? So there are 2 issues here in my mind. One issue is it made by man? Are tables and beds made by man?
Yeah.
Yes. Is the tent space underneath a tent space made by man? It's interesting. It sort of like got there on its own, you know? It's interesting. So there's 2 issues, and the question is if they're related or they're not related. Because on the one hand, 100%, the tent of the bed of the table are made by man, but that certainly was not a tent made by man. So how much that will relate to us, we'll have to figure it out. But
what's he really saying? Like, what's why?
So far, all we have is a machlokas, Yitanacham and Yehuda, which is a tent something that simply got there, however it got there, and we don't care, or is it only considered a tent at least vis-a-vis Tumas Meis when it was made by man?
Okay, and if it was made by man, then the problem, then you would have a problem. So have
everyone agrees if it's made by man, you have a problem. The question is, if it's naturally occurring, is it also a problem?
Does it stay bumping?
No, does it spread to my space? Does it spread to my
space?
Does it function as a tent vis-a-vis to my space? We don't know what that would apply outside
of it. So
what
if you're saying that it's man-made, it's not considered a tent? Then
it is. If it's man-made, it's a tent. If it's not man-made, then it doesn't spread to my space.
And if there's an animal or whatever, one of all these things that would cause tumah, so to speak.
Well, that's about contact. Tumas mace means that there's a dead body.
It wouldn't spread, it means that it wouldn't.
It just go up. Go straight up.
And
It wouldn't spread. It wouldn't spread under the
tent. Under that entire area?
But would not. Unless it's man-made. This is man-made. So which one is the bigger Kiddush? Rabbi Huda or Tanakama? Tanakama holds anything that is an ohel is an ohel. And Rabbi Huda says, no, only man-made ohalim is an ohel. Which one's a bigger Kiddush? Rabbi Huda, right? Agreement? Rabbi Huda is the bigger Kiddush. So of course, which one is the Gemara going to attack first? The bigger Kiddush. Gemara doesn't like Chidushim, right? We don't like Chidushim. We like things to be simple, straightforward. Chidushim, we always attack. My time with Rabbi Huda. What is the reason for Rabbi Huda's distinction? So what can I tell you? It's not a svara. Yalif oyel oyel mimishkan. He learns what's that called? Oyel oyel, what's that called? Yes. It is a gzer shava. He learns gzer shava from the word oyel. The word oyel appears in two different places. It appears by Tumas Meis, and it appears by the Mishkan. It's okay. We give you credit. No problem. Ksiv hacha. It says over here, Zaysa Torah. This is the Torah. Adam ki yamus ba'oyel. Right? Famous Rasha. Where will you find the Torah? Zaysa Torah. This is the Torah. Where will you find the Torah? Adam ki yamus ba'oyel. A person that kills himself in the tent. That dies in the tent. What do you mean? What's talking about? What tent? The Beis Medrash. The Beis Medrash. Zaysa Torah Adam ki yamus ba'oyel. Where will you find Torah? You will only find Torah in a person that has killed himself to understand it. A person that, like, you know, looked something up on the internet, googled it. That's not where you'll find Torah. Only by a person that kills himself to learn. But that's not how we're learning it right now, because that's a drasha. We are learning Pashup Shat. The Pashup Shat of the Pasuk is Zois HaTorah. This is the Torah of Tuma. Adam Kiyomis Ba'oyel, a person that dies in a tent, so then whatever is in the tent becomes Tuma. That's the purpose of this Pasuk. So that's what we're focusing on right now. It says the word Oyel specifically. It could have said a covering, it could have said other words. He uses the word oil specifically, Ksiv Hasam, and it says over there, vis-a-vis regarding the Mishkan, Vayifres is oil ala Mishkan, and they spread the tent on the Mishkan. Now, of course, it doesn't mean they spread the tent, it means the curtains, the Yirios. But the Yirios are referred to as an oil. Why does it have to call them an oil? I mean, it's true, it became an oil once you put them on, but you can't say it's a tent that you spread, it's a tent afterwards. You know what I'm saying by that? In other words, it's an oil post facto. But you don't say that you spread the tent. You say you spread the yirios, you spread the curtains on the Mishkan, and then it became an oil. But it says, Vayifres es ha'oil. So that's a little bit unusual. So the answer is that's to teach us a gzeirah shava. It's like the word oil is saying, hello, pay attention to me, I'm here to teach you something. What's that, sir? Oil, oil, gzeirah shava. Where else do you find the word oil? Aha, it's my snakes. Ma'ala halam b'dayadam, just like the curtains were spread by what? By people. They were made. The curtains were spread to become an oil. Afkan, so too when it comes to Tumas Meis, says Rabbi Huda, b'dayadam. It only is considered to be an oil vis-a-vis Tumas Meis if it was made by man. Ooh. That's a tough one to come back to. What's the pushback? It's Erushala. What do you say? V'rabbanan. Oil, oil, riba. I don't know exactly how they respond to the Dereshava part of it. They don't have such a Masorah, so they're not obligated to learn it. But Rabbi Huda did, so what do you do about that? It was a sticky issue with Dereshava. But what their point is that you don't find the word Oyel by Tumas Meis just once. You find it numerous times. And because of that, the Torah is trying to tell you that's not the only kind of Oyel. That's not the only kind. There is a kind called one that's Asui Bidei Adam, but there are many other kinds as well. And because the word Oyel appears multiple times unnecessarily, by Tumas Meis, so therefore it teaches you that anything could be an oil. It doesn't have to be man-made. Okay, so that's their machlokas. Their machlokas is rooted in how to address the multiplicity of the word oil versus the gzeirah shava, and however they deal with those nuances. V'sav Rabbi Huda kol oil shein asu b'dei adam ein oil. So now the Gemara goes on the attack. V'sav Rabbi Huda, does Rabbi Huda learn reason any ten shein asu b'dei adam? That is not made by man, meaning any naturally occurring or by animals or whatever, any tent that's not made by man, ain't an oil, is not a tent. Or minhu, what type of kashas or minhu, what should we be expecting? a contradiction. We're going to bring, this is not a kasha from my thought process. This is another case where you'd have said something that's a contradiction. You guys ever learn this stuff about Paraduma? The Mishnayos over there in Parah describe, as we're about to right now, that they wanted to make sure that there was no tumah involved in order to produce the Parah Aduma. Because if it's already tumah, you're stuck. So you have to produce the Parah Aduma ashes with complete and total purity. So this is what they used to do. If you've never heard this before, you're not going to believe this. Chatzeros hayu benuyos b'Yerushalayim. What are chatzeros? Courtyards. Hayu benuyos? Were built. B'Yerushalayim. Al-Gabe Hasela, on top of a rock. What's the significance of that? Why does it have to be that they built a courtyard on top of a rock? Well, let me ask you a question. How easy is it to bury someone in a rock? It doesn't work, right? You gotta like dig it out and like, it doesn't work. So why did they do that? Because they wanted to be guaranteed that nobody's buried there. Because the whole point of all of this is that we want to have an area of the world which is totally pure from Tumas Meis. We can be guaranteed there ain't no dead body buried under there. What?
How big of a boulder?
I don't know. It's interesting.
Right? Like a flat surface,
big boulder.
So, you know, a lot of times you go to, you know, you find like these mountains, and the mountains are like a bunch of rocks. So that's what it sounds like. They have a cool picture over here. That's what they make it look like. But that's what I would envision. That there was some area which was extremely, extremely rocky. Huge rocks. And so there's clearly nobody buried under there because the rocks are looking pretty old and there's nowhere to dig down. So it looks like there's no way that anyone's buried under there. V'tachteyam, nonetheless, underneath the courtyards, chalal, they still made a hollow. So I don't know if you can see this picture. Maybe I should just draw it. But the idea being that in addition to all of this fact that it's made on a rock, so what could possibly be underneath it, they made arches. So if this is the courtyard, and so here you have, you know, whatever houses are on top of this, like, platform. Those are the courtyards. So there's, you know, it's like a very rocky mountain or something that's, you know, that's here. But nonetheless, they made arches on top of the rock. And then they built the courtyards on top of those arches. Why in the world would they do that? And the truth is, you know, you go now, they've done a lot of research into this. Those of you that are certified tour guides, so you know that in Yerushalayim, this was a big deal. That when they built the Beis HaMikdash and all the structures around there, this is how they built things up. Because they wanted there to be an oihel underneath whatever they're building. Because that way, if there's any tumah, it's blocked and it doesn't rise up. So the Kohanim, who needed to be wherever they needed to be in Yerushalayim, would be able to go on these pathways, any of these areas that they knew was built with these arches. But here's the picture that they have over here, if you can see it. So they have these courtyards built on top of these arches. Why did they do that? Mipnei kever hatahoim. So literally translated, a kever means a grave, tahom. Yeah, like the depths. So because of a kever of the depths, meaning nobody knows there's anybody buried here, but the truth of the matter is, even though we don't know what there is, and because there's no ohel anywhere, it rises up to Shemayim. So that would be a big problem for anybody that wants to make sure they're staying Tor from Tumas Meis. So that's called kever at the home, a kever that nobody knows about, and it just rises up to Shemayim. So the Mishnah is telling us that they had chatzeros that were built in Yerushalayim on top of a rock, and underneath them were hallows because of what's called kever hatahom. But mevi and nashim ubros, so that we would bring pregnant women, the yoldosham, and they would give birth there. The magadlis b'neiam sham, and they would raise their children there. Lipara, for the purpose of para aduma. That's stage one. Stage two. Okay, now we actually have to do it. So what do we need? But we need water that was drawn from the Mea Shiloyach. What? Para Aduma. The red cow, the red heifer. It doesn't say Aduma, but that's what it means. So then the next stage was, okay, now let's get everything done. We need to get done with all of these pure children. The mothers could have been done in mace, you know? But the children were born without ever having any contact with mace, and they were born in this place. Yeah.
Somebody is coming in mace and the child.
Yeah.
I felt like another person touches another person.
So it's a little bit complicated, but the baby being born has never had any contact with Tumas Mesa at all.
But
it was inside the mother even.
Contact with the mother.
I mean, afterwards?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure all of the mothers had Paraduma before they went to this place. Anyhow, does anybody actually spell that out? Rashi doesn't say anything. Okay, I don't know. No, I don't see anybody talking about it right away. But the two issues would be if it was a Zman of Paraduma, so I'm sure that they gave them Paraduma before they went. If it's after the Zman of Paraduma, so they negotiated it in a way where, in other words, Bizman is Zeh, right? That would be the question. What about Bizman is Zeh? So we can negotiate in a way where there's no contact, the baby is just born, and then, you know, we'll worry about the mothers, I guess, afterwards. So that's what they did. Mevi'in shivarim, they would bring, shivarim is the plural for shore in Aramaic. So they would bring shivarim, these oxen, v'algavein d'lasois, and on top of them were, well, literally doors. But in other words, it's a platform. It was a piece of wood that was spread across the ox. V'tinekas yashven algavein, and the children, the babies, not we're talking about little tiny babies, we're talking about children, so they would sit on top of these boards. So you can picture it. You've got this big fat ox, and on top of the ox is like a big sheet of plywood, you know? It's this big, huge board. And they had stone cups in their hands, and they would lead them where? When they arrived at the Shiloyach, the Mea Shiloyach, remember that's that channel that's nowadays in Ir David. If they dug out from one end to the other end, and then, you know, it's filled with water. You guys have all been through it? Yeah? Didn't go on that teal? So you can go on the Me'ashilah. That's what he said, draw water for all kinds of purposes. So that would, they would go to the Shilayach. And according to the first part here, Yardu l'zechamayim, they would get off of their boards on their oxen, and they would go into the water. Umil'um, fill up their stone cups. Why were they stone?
Because it's
not common. Exactly. V'olo, v'yashu, and they would go back onto their oxen, and they would sit back on them to get them to wherever they needed to go, to the Beis HaMikdash, whatever, to deliver the water. Rabbi Yossi, Omer, Rabbi Yossi says, Mimkoimaya Mashalshel Mamale, even they gave her time. From his place, meaning each child, from his place on top of the ox, on top of his board, he would Mashalshel, he would chain down, he would lower down his cup, and he would fill it up, Mamale, he would fill it up from the Shilayach, because even there we're concerned, Mipnei Kever Hatahim, that maybe there is some sort of kever there that they're going to come into contact with, or they're going to, you know, traverse, they'll go above it, and they'll become tame. So he didn't think that they even got off of the boards. They actually collected the water with their cups attached to some kind of chain or whatever it is. V'tanya, I don't know, because it wasn't a metal chain. I don't know what it was made out of. V'tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Loi Hayomevian Delazais. And we have a brisa that explains this Mishnah. And the Brisa has a comment from Rabbi Yehuda, which is really what we care about, because we're trying to bring a contradiction to Rabbi Yehuda. So let's just backtrack for 1 second. What was Rabbi Yehuda's statement? What did he say? That any oil which is not made by man is not an oil. Not an oil. So he says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Lo Hayomevian D'Lasais, they never used these boards on top of the oxen. Ela Shvarim, they simply rode on these big fat oxen. V'ha, okay, so why? What's the issue here? So the Gemara is trying to say, the Gemara is assuming, that the reason for this is that he doesn't require the boards. The boards are not necessary. Because since you're dealing with small children and big fat oxen, the ox itself serves as an oihel for the tumah underneath. Why? Because the ox has a big spine and big rib cages, and it's considered to be an oyel. The structure of the axe, the physical body of the axe, is considered to be an oyel between the ground and the children. So that's all they know. That was all that was necessary. Ooh, what? Yehuda says, "Lo yamevian delasas al shvarim, b'shvarim, but oxen the oyel shein asim b'degadamu." We're not talking about an ox that was made through Sefer Yetzira or some form of magic or whatever. We're talking about naturally born oxen. Naturally born oxen are not made by man. They're made by God. And therefore, that should have been a problem, according to Yehuda, because it's not going to be a valid oil. According to Yehuda, they should require the boards. This shouldn't be good enough just to ride on the shore.
Because it's natural, which means not around.
Yeah, isn't that what he says? So that's the contradiction to Yehuda.
V'katani Yehuda Aimer lahem evian delasais ale shvarim.
And Yehuda says, they didn't use delasais. They used just the oxen. How could that be? Contradiction of Yehuda. Kiyas Rav Dimi Yomer Rav Elazar. Just kind of unusual. You eat Rav Dimi Yomer Rav Yochanan. Because Rav Dimi was Asa, he was coming from Eretz Yisrael to Babel. So usually, he came with reports from Rav Yochanan. But in this case, Rav Dimi says, Amar Rav Elazar. Rav Elazar said, Moed Rav Yehuda Kimalei Egroif. What does that mean? Rav Yehuda agrees when it is the size Kimalei, it's like a filled what? Egroif. Fist? So sometimes you have these, the Gemara has a reference to nasty people, like bullies. Calls them Bali Egroifin. People that come with their fists. The egroif refers to the fist. Nasty people. Anyway, here we're just saying that Rav Yehuda agrees when it's the size of a fist. What do you mean when it's the size of a fist? What does it mean? Well, the oyel, right? See Rashi? Rashi 1, 2, 3, 5 lines down in the wide lines. Kimalei egroif, like a fistful. Oyel, a tent, sherochav kimalei egroif. A tent that has the width of a fist, so it's a tefach. Which is a little bit more than a tevach. Moider of Yehuda, Yehuda agrees. Even though it's not made by man, it is considered to be an oil. So wait, what's the story here? So what we're saying is, according to Yehuda, the idea that an oil that is not made by man is not an oil is because we're talking about something that's natural and like a tefach. It's very small. But once it becomes bigger than a tefach, so then even Rabbi Huda says, at the end of the day, that's a tent, there's nothing to talk about. That's the Gemara's distinction, that's according to Rabbi Elazar. Tani Nami Hach, you have a braisa that says the same thing. Rabbi Huda agrees to what are these things? What are shkifin? And nekike hasloim. Well, nekike sounds a little bit easier. A sela is a rock. So nekike means something that's broken, carved out, something like that. And shkifin, what's that? Like a mashkof is like the top of the door, you know, it's the thing that the door slams against. Hashkifa, you know, to like look out. What's shkifin? Slayim ha-noiflim u-misparkin baruach. That there are rocks that fall and they break up in the wind. V'yesh kor gadol b'makom akirasan. And there's a big hole in the place that they fell out of. Yeah, right. So, you know, a lot of times it happens just over time that rocks fall out of rocky mountains. And what's left where the rock fell out is a crevice. So that crevice is called Shkifin. Moder Behuda, but Shkifin in the Kiyas Lahim, that he agrees when there's a significant overhang that where the rock fell out, or in the breaking of certain rocks, so then he's Moder, that would be considered to be a tent. Even though it's naturally occurring. So it doesn't spell it out so clearly what the shiur is, but Rabbi Elazar claimed that Rabbi Yehuda would be maskim once it's larger than a fist. Wait a minute. But the board that we're talking about, and it has certainly several fists of width, and we have, and Rabbi Yehuda says, on this Mishnah in Parah, but they didn't use those. They used the oxen. So what's the kasha?
Because
Do you have a gasha? What's the gasha?
He's just saying you don't use it, right?
Wait, but that addresses the question we just asked, or this is like a new question? What does it mean, a groipin? A groipin is the width of the tent, right? The width of the object, no? Is it how high it is? How much it's being a tent over? Or it's the width of the tent itself? So that's what Rashi said. That's what we read a second ago. Kimalei Egroif. Oyel she rochav Kimalei Egroif. The width is a little bit more than a tefach. But Rashi here says v'harei deles diyesh v'kame groifin. Rashi says mina karka ad deles. From the ground until this door, this piece of this wood board, whatever that's on top of the. Of the shore, there's a lot of space. So what? Wait a minute. What does that have to do with anything? What does anything? Loi hayomevi and delasai. So they didn't use the doors. Okay. So what? Kasal kadaite. So the Gemara is assuming. Gemara thinks mishum dein derech oyel bakach that that's not the derech of an oyel. Because who in the world ever puts a board on the back of an ox? That's how you make a tent. No one makes a tent like that. The Koshig and Shvarim, certainly a shore, that's not gonna be a tent. And therefore what? Therefore none of this should have worked? What's the Gemara's kasha? Very Dallas, the Yesh Bakama Graven, Katani Rihuda Oimer, Loy Hai may be in Dallas al Shvarim. So what's the kasha? That's a rejection of what we just said? What do you think? Well, if we would argue, not like Rashi, that the Mele Egroif has to do with the height of the oil.
I mean, at the end of the day, we're just saying, but it's like we don't use boards. We use oxen.
Why?
It's just saying, we don't use boards. And so therefore, it sounds like it's saying that it doesn't matter.
But the kids are traveling to get the water, right? So they're going from this safe place, where there's no Tumas Mace, all the way to the Shiloyah, where... That's a machlokas also, if we can assume that the shilach itself is not a problem. But either way, so the traveling is the problem. Any place they travel over could be a problem of tumah. So they need some kind of oyel mafsik between them and the ground. So that's the idea of the board. So if you're going to argue they use boards, it's because you're assuming that the shore is enough. Otherwise, we've got serious problems here. Like, they wasted their whole lives, you know? All these years that they've been living in this safe place. Bubble. So what do you say? So it seems that when Rashi said the width, it doesn't just mean the width. I mean, it means that there's a little bit more than a tefach of oihel altogether. Space and width also. So here you have an example where you have a lot more than a mali egroif, and therefore what? And therefore, it should have been fine. And it sounds like it is fine, because everybody says it's fine. So what's the kasha? So what did Rashi say? Kasal gadai de mishum de ein derech oyel b'kach. Isn't the reason that Yehuda is saying there's no reason to bring a board is because that's not called an oyel, despite the fact that it may be ma'ahil, it's creating an oyel over way more than a fist. But at the end of the day, that's not called making an oil. So for sure, the shore isn't good enough.
Wait, were we just saying it's not? I thought you said it's not necessary.
Right. So that's what Rashi is saying. It's kasal gadaitoch. This is what the Gemara seems to be assuming. Oh, well, let's go a little weiter and see if we can put it together. Amar Abaye, lehutzruchu lahavi dalasais. Lehutzruchu. It's not that they're no good. They're useless. It wasn't.
Necessary.
Okay.
So then we're good. So at the end of the day, there is Kamal Yagarev. We are assuming it's the body of the shore, and because there's so much width and height to it, it really is fine. So it was a funny kasha. Rabba Amar, Lohem if Yendala says Kalikar. They wouldn't bring boards at all. Shem ibn Eich, Daita Shaltina Gasa Alav. Because since the mind of the baby is Gasa Alav. So how do you translate that? He's a character, and children are curious, they're arrogant?
Overconfident.
They're what? Overconfident?
Yeah.
So the way that in the Masifta he says, Kishatina Geshev Agaba Yadelas, when he's sitting on top of the board, on top of the ox, so in his mind he's like, oh, you know, this is my safe place, you know. And because they're not scared of anything, children, so we're afraid. What? Shema, back in the Gemara, Shema Yoitzi Roishoi, he's gonna stick out his head, he's just gonna have his, you know. You can imagine a kid riding on a board on the back of a cow, right? What's he doing? He's surfing, you know. He's like dancing. He's like peeking over the side, you know. So, but if he's riding on the ox, what's he gonna do? He's gonna have fun riding on the ox. That's fun riding on the ox. So that's interesting. The psychology of children. We're afraid he's gonna stick out his head or one of his limbs and become tamei bekevratoim because of the unmarked kever of the deaths. Tanya Kavase de Rebbe Yehuda. Okay, so far what do we have? So we have a machlekes that we have really, really minimized. That the original machlekes was in terms of tumas mace. So we thought Rebbe Yehuda's opinion was that in order to be an oyal, it has to be bidei adam. Now we're saying, nah, it's in a very narrow area that he says that. If it's mamish, like a tefach thick, which is what you need to have an oil anyway. So then if it's a tefach, exactly, so then that's when it has to be made by man. But once it's a little bit bigger than a tefach, so then it just goes by reality. Reality is that it does make a tent, and therefore even Rabbi Huda agrees that that is a valid tent. That's a problematic tent in terms of Hilchas Tumas Mis. Tanya Kavase de Rava. And we have a brisa that supports Rava's approach to this, which was that the reason that Rabbi Huda doesn't like the boards is because not that it's not right. What's the machlok between Abai and Rava? Abai said it's not necessary, but would Rabbi Huda be okay with it? Yeah, he would say you're wasting your time and your money. It's stupid, but he's okay with it. According to Rava, no, he was not okay with it because it was going to lead to problems because the children are going to be dancing and prancing and looking. And it's going to create bigger problems. But it wasn't an issue of Tumah V'Tahara in terms of the oil. That wasn't the concern. The concern was the kid's going to stick stuff off and then and make himself tummy. Tanakh Kavasi to Yehuda, and we also have a Braisa, sorry, Tanakh Kavasi to Rava. We have a Braisa supports the approach of Rava. Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Lahem, Mevi'en D'Lasas Kol Ikar, Mipnei, Shaddai T'Shal Tinoik, Gasa Alav, Shema Yetzi Roish, Ayecha Mevarav, V'Tamah Bekever, Hatahoim. Ella, Mevi'en Shvarim, Hamitzrim, Shikarseim, Rechavais. Rather, they would bring Egyptian oxen whose kresa, whose bellies are Rechavais are very wide. Vatinoikais, Yeshivin, Al Gabayan, and the children would sit on top of them, a kresa shall even be a dayan, with these stone cups in their hands. Yigil Shilech, when they get to the Shilech, Yardim Alam, they would go down and fill up the cups. Va'alu, go back up. Yashvilehan, Al Gabayan, sit back on the backs of the big fat Egyptian oxen. So we'll finish it up in session tomorrow, but that's at least that section. Crazy stuff to think about, huh? Yeah.